C7. Number 6B.
We state the law now. Here it is difficult grammatically, so I start right out and elaborate it with mind. We could write as a law, accepting that we have the mind, which is the mind of God. Yes, accepting that we have the mind, which is the mind of God. Write that on one line. If you have that as a law, you easily can now elaborate it. How do you elaborate it? Oh, first, what does it mean? What does it mean as oneness? As oneness, it means that we go out from the fact where we accept that we have that mind, which is also the mind of God. That we have no other mind, but that mind, which is also the mind of God. Now, this stated on paper and spelt out loudly as I do it, is perhaps not very impressive. But when we sit back in the evening and everything is quiet around us and we really can think out what it means in practical terms, that I say to myself, I have only that mind, which is also the mind of God, and you are quite sure that you are no more asking questions. Oh, I frightened you now, huh? You know the right meaning of what I say. You have a feeling that you have really the answer of everything within you. And you have a feeling that you don't want to get an answer from anybody else, but actually only straight from the horse's mouth, from mind, and not from anybody else, not from a human mind, not from a personal opinion. And by God, this is really beautiful. Even if one doesn't feel that one has found the answer, not for a day, not for a week, not for a year, not for 10 years, it's still wonderful. You know that when the answer comes, it is from God and it's eternal. And it's not just a temporary answer. And that it comes, when it comes from God, from the divine mind, that it sticks so that it changes one's whole life. That we are no more the same afterwards. You know, these things are here to be thought out quietly. And you just think out what that means, what it means to accept that we have that mind, capitalized, which is the mind of God. And that therefore I have the mind of God, the mind of Christ. And just think what that is going to do to us. Naturally we see as we go on with the chapter, we see what's going to do to us. But it's impressive. And it gives you a peace and an assurance and a power and an authority and a supremacy and a mastery that is beyond words. The only thing you have to do humanly is not to get impatient. The answer will always come at the right moment, not at the wrong moment. And it will always come through the right channel, not through the wrong channels. And it will always come through those symbols which we can understand, not through the symbols which we cannot understand. That mind is so intelligent, you know, that it is all-seeing, all-hearing, all-foreseeing, and just has all abilities and all faculties. So just go over that, you know, and see this simple law. If you look now at this simple statement and you elaborate it, and you go now further and you make your dittos, you can do it mechanically first, and it says accepting that we have the Spirit, which is the Spirit of God. And you go on to soul and say we accept that we have the soul, which is the soul of God. And then to principle, that we have that principle, which is the principle of God. That we have that life, capital L, which is the life of God. To think about this for half an hour, and it catapults us right outside the earth, outside the material universe, to think that we should accept that life, which is the life of God, to think out what that simple statement means is terrific. It's so overwhelming, so overturning, that we can almost be the same as before. And so with truth, accepting that we have the truth, which is the truth of God, and then the love that we have, accepting that we have that love, which is the love of God, and you think about it. Now, can you see the difficulty, perhaps, which I have as trying to teach this, is that this law looks so simple that nobody really wants to give any attention to it. It's so terribly simple. And the elaboration is so simple that you think that is all right for kindergarten teaching. And it isn't. You see, this is just the point, that these things that look so simple, the moment we contemplate them and the moment we pray about them, praying here would mean pondering them. Pondering would mean to see the implication of them. Seeing the implication of them would see what it means to me, how different my whole world view would be after that, how that would give me a completely other level of consciousness. And if we contemplate that, then we don't have any more the feeling this is kindergarten stuff. But that's what I would like to do. All these laws are simple. The elaboration are absolutely simple. And so don't neglect them because they are simple. Don't think that we should rather have an investigating something that is absolutely complicated, wherein with one sentence that runs for 10 lines, you have to see what is meant by it. This isn't so important. These laws, which a law is always a reduction of infinite variety to one statement, to one law. Therefore, a law, properly stated, is comprising infinite phenomena. And that's the beauty of a law, that it is able to reduce and reduce and reduce until you only have the blunt facts, you see. Therefore, if we would take this law again, that accepting that we have the mind, which is the mind of God, you could now, because that divine science includes absolute Christian science, you could easily elaborate it if you feel you want to do it by giving to the synonymous term a characteristic idea that is in conformity with prayer, not only with mind, but conformity with prayer, with a prayerful attitude. And let's do that quickly here, you know. And I give you first, I don't ask you, it's too difficult for the beginning, and one needs to know the chapter on prayer quite well in order to have the right tonality in it. So you take that same law again, and perhaps you write perhaps in a different color or whatever you like into it, you see. Use your notes a bit intelligently. You write one as an important characteristic of the synonymous term in it, which gives us a sense of prayer. For instance, we could see what Mrs. Eddy would accentuate in the chapter. What is the law? We said, accepting that we have the mind, which is the mind of God. Now let's see, what is the mind of God in prayer? In prayer it is that mind is the all-knowing prayer, all-knowing mind. Huh? Because in a prayer, the Father must know what we need. Huh? So you can put in that law, no matter how you do it, with another color or so, where you have mind in brackets, you just put in the all-intelligent or all-knowing mind. In spirit, we can see that by accepting that we have that spirit, which is the spirit of God, what is necessary for the spirit of God in prayer? What should God give us? An auto car? Or a house? Or what? He has to give us the substance, the things of God, huh? The spiritual substance of God, the nature of spirit he has to give us. Huh? So we can see that accepting that we have the spirit, which is the spirit of God, which is the nature and substance of spirit. Hmm? We can put in there the nature and substance of spirit. If you take soul, what should soul give us in a prayer? What do we expect it? That we get into more trouble or to less trouble? Does it give us more sin or less sin? Huh? Does it give us more sorrow or less sorrow? And you can see that what prayer should answer to us is that it gives us that which is sinless and satisfying, huh? So you can see that accepting that we have the soul, which is the all-satisfying sinlessness of soul. If we take principle, what do we ask from principle? Do we ask from principle that principle makes the situation even more upside down and even more chaotic and even more contradictory and even more less transparent and more opaque? Or what do we ask from principle? We certainly ask from principle in prayer that is going to solve the situation, that is going to bring some kind of harmony into the situation, some kind of consistency into the situation, some kind of what is the fact about contradiction, non-contradiction? Consistency, inner consistency into the situation. Huh? So we can bring in those qualities of principle, huh? And see through by accepting that we have that principle, which is the consistent, harmonious, huh? Sense of principle. That will be answer prayer when something uncontradictory, harmonious, is brought forth. Why do we pray to life? Do we pray to life that life is going on the same way as ever before, that our trouble are going on and on and on and on and on and on and never cease? Or do we pray that something changes, that a new situation breaks in, that a better and exalted situation breaks in, that the newness of life comes in? This would be an answer prayer. So we can see, oh, I accept that I have that life, which is always the renewing, exalting, fresh life. And you give to life a certain tonality that is adapted to prayer. What could we see in truth? In truth, what is the prayer, what is the answer of truth? The answer of truth naturally is that we become aware of the result of the right answer, that we are no more in darkness in regard to the right answer, that we are no more going on to live in the darkness of error, but that the light of truth, the light of consciousness breaks in, and we can see, oh, I see now. Huh? I found the answer. So we can see here, we can see, oh, we accept as our starting point that we have only that truth within us, which is the divine consciousness of truth, the self-consciousness of truth, the supra-consciousness of truth. And then I'm no more going on in the subconscious and in the collective unconscious and in the archetypal unconscious with all that psychic chaos going on. Then really things have cleaned up and cleared up in a divine supra-consciousness. That's what I ask from prayer. That my consciousness is cleared up to 100%. And in love, we would naturally see that the pinnacle of prayer is an answer prayer, a fulfilled state of thought, of a fulfilled state of things. And so I can see, oh yes, if I accept that I have no other love but that fulfilled sense of love, that perfection of love, that sense of the hallowed sense of love, of the holiness of love, then I have an answer prayer. Now do you see how we can work on a law? Now what I have taken, you see, the law itself of oneness would just have been stating things with the synonymous terms. That is on the level of divine science. But we have seen that for its practical application, we really could translate it to a sense of absolute Christian science and combine divine science and absolute Christian science in bringing out the specific tonality adapted to a prayer. Now, we have taken out now qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love that are adapted to the subject of prayer. I have not just taken any old I don't know if you say that in America. I have never really heard it so much in America, but much more in England. They always say, well, any old thing, huh? Meaning just at random. Huh? So we don't take just at random any idea from our list of the ideas of mind and spirit and soul and put it here. But we weigh spiritually what is the specific accentuation of a synonymous term that is not adapted to the synonymous term, but is adapted to word as word, to prayer. So that as we go on, we should feel that we get some kind of a variation from chapter to chapter when we elaborate on the laws. Now, these qualities that I have not entirely taken out of my own spiritual sense or of my own scientific sense, but very much also out of actually Mrs. Eddy's text. But one has to see it because it's not spelled out verbally. Because verbally, textually, in the text is spelled out something else, namely, when one translates that further down to Christian science, then we get really the textual confirmation in Mrs. Eddy, and then prayer looks very different again. Do you know, have you in mind the seven prayers? Perhaps you just make a note. I will not do that in every chapter, just in the first chapter as an example what is meant by it. You remember Mrs. Eddy when she presents prayer and she presents the text of prayer from the standpoint of how the reader approaches the subject of prayer, and therefore present it from the standpoint of the level of Christian science and not of divine science. And therefore she presents how these synonymous terms come to the human, translate themselves into an attitude in the human, which is congruent with the synonymous term. So I give you quickly, just in a few epitomes, she therefore has the prayer of mind, which is the prayer of true desire to know God as He is. The true desire to know God as He is. In spirit, just make only a few notes, it's the prayer of spirit is the longing to express divine qualities. Longing to express divine qualities. In soul, it is reformation through counseling sin. Reformation through counseling sin. In principle, it is honesty through correction. Honesty through correction. In life, it is wholeness through deep consecration. Deep consecration. In deep consecration. In truth, it is affirmation of spiritual facts. In love, it is deliverance through holiness. Deliverance through holiness. Yes. Now, just look at this list. Can you see how you have now three levels, so to say? The first level of divine science is just a synonymous term, your law. The second is what we have taken in as characteristics. And now third, the human approach. Can you see how it is? Now, in the mind, if we accept from the standpoint of divine science, we accept that we have the mind, which is the mind of God, that comes to us now in the second as the all-knowing mind, the all-intelligence, all-knowing mind, and translates itself to the human, to the prayer of wisdom, the desire to know God as He is. Do you see now the translation? Or you have spirit, and we have seen spirit translates itself as the nature and substance of spirit that should be given in prayer, and the human reaction to it is that we actually long for these divine spiritual qualities, the divine nature. And in this way you can go through all the seven and see that they are the translation from the level of divine science to absolute Christian science to Christian science. There you have now, say, a symbolization of what we were talking about last week, especially that an identity remains an identity, but it changes its phenomena the moment it's translated to another dimension. Yes? So mind translated to the dimension of the absolute Christian science becomes here the all-knowing, all-intelligent mind, translated to the dimension of the human, becomes a desire and a longing to know God as He is. And it's still mind. Yes? Okay. We make a break here.